It's Adam's fault.
Broadcasting from the beautiful Hill Country in Texas, this is OneRadioNetwork.com.
Well, a very pleasant good morning to you. This is Patrick Timpone, OneRadioNetwork.com. Here we are, the first week in June, and that means Adam Bergstrom, the first Monday of the month, Adam 2.0, the third Monday. Got a good lineup of folks for you this week, as always. We're here live 9 to 11 or so, every weekday morning, broadcasting from our palatial studios, high atop my kitchen in Dripping Springs, Texas. Tomorrow, Sam Milhelm, he's a good one. Sam's a PhD type, but he really knows a lot about electromagnetic fields, grounding stuff. We're going to get a 5G update from him. And Trip the Light Fandango with Dr. Milhelm. Michael Lewis, all about the brain tomorrow. We're going to learn about the brain. Remember the movie Hannibal, which was a follow-up to, and Hannibal cut the guy's... Adam, did you see that movie?
I sure did. Ray Liotta. The one who lost his brain.
Tell folks what happened. So Hannibal was played by Anthony Hopkins, and this was the follow-up. It's a great movie, by the way. And then... he cut old Ray Liotta's scalp of his skull off, right? And then he was just cutting off his brain and frying it up for him. It was a trip. Is that the name of that movie, Hannibal, I think?
It's something like that. I think there were three of those movies, if I'm not mistaken.
Really? I want to see the other one, because I had not seen that one, I guess, about 6 months ago. I saw it, and I was just really well done. I mean, it's great, great movie, yeah.
Anthony Hopkins is one of the best actors around.
But when he's frying up Ray's brain, and Ray Liotta was eating it, going, oh, this is so good. And Jeez. Unbelievable. Well, we're not going to do that. We're not going to eat your brain tomorrow, but we're going to talk about the brain and fat and stuff like that. Yeah, this fellow is actually a very conventional kind of a brain dude, but he's into all kinds of normal, natural kind of things that we like to play with. Dr. Renee Toko is going to be with us on Thursday. She's cool. She is a founder of the Foundation for Pediatric Health nonprofit. A lot of stuff about autism and really cool stuff on cleansing and the explosion of childhood illnesses in our culture. So I'm sure we'll have plenty to talk about with vaccines. And then also a fellow, he calls himself the medicine hunter, and he's into things like ashwagandha, the king of herbs. Have you ever taken ashwagandha, Adam?
I don't think I have. No.
You haven't really taken that one? Oh, man. Yeah, listen to the show. Ashwagandha is an Ayurvedic herb, and that'll take care of you. So Adam Bergstrom, yes, no, maybe, Chronobiotic Nutrition, solartiming.com, also SunSync Nutrition, hangs out in Mendocino, down the street from Ellen DeGeneres, and he's here twice a month. So how you doing? What's going on?
Super Groovalistic, Prozapunk Cicacious. California now has made cigarette butts illegal.
Oh, good. Oh, good for them. Well, that's good.
But it's actually a good thing, because beaches here, one-third of all the trash that comes off of the beach are cigarette butts. And, of course, all the birds get it and die and all that kind of stuff. So you'd think that people would pick up their cigarette butts. And they want to put them in toxic waste now, which is probably a good idea.
Yeah, so it's against the law in California to put cigarette butts on the street, right?
Yep, any place. You can't dump them now. They're going to, I think it's in, I think it's being voted on now, but it's probably going to pass. Mm-hmm. The other big thing is the federal government has figured out how to screw with California's marijuana industry by legalizing the hemp industry.
So they're legalizing the industrial hemp.
Yep. And see, that makes it a farm product. So what they can do now, what you get high on is the female plant's frustration because it can't get to a male. Well, hemp has all a bunch of male plants. So all you have to do is plant hemp within 20 miles of where they're growing pot, and your quality of your pot goes down where it's not even commercial. So that's what the wine growers are going to be doing here, and the avocado growers. They're just going to plant hemp around their property, and the marijuana growers can't do anything about it.
So why do the wine growers not like marijuana?
Competition, and also the avocado growers, because the laws are so strict now on you can't use pesticides around pot. One billionth of something percent of it in pot makes it unsellable. So you can't have any. It's been nice for us because now there's no pesticides in our local area since that happened. But of course, the avocado growers are up in arms. Even the ones that have organic farms can use certain organic pesticides, but they are even banning a lot of those. So, like I say, the price of avocados is going to go up in our local area, and there's wars between the avocado growers and the pot growers and the pot growers and the hemp growers.
Of course.
Yeah. And the wine growers who are now growing hemp, like hemp walls around their property.
So I didn't know the gov, the one we love, I guess. But they'll probably fight that. I mean, can't California, just by the 10th Amendment states' rights, just say that you can't legalize hemp here? It's up to us, and they'll probably fight them on that too, won't they?
We will see. I don't think they can, because also there's more money now in CBD oil than there is in pot. That's
right.
Pretty funny.
Really? Yeah.
So anyway, that's what's going on here.
That's what's going on in California. Between. Yeah. The War of the Roses, or the War of the...
Yeah, and of course they're figuring out how to do the taxes and how to bill who and who's responsible for what. And see, with hemp, you can have it stink up the place and no one can complain. But with marijuana, if you don't like the smell, you can complain and have suits against the marijuana industry. So they're doing everything they can to stop legalized pot, or to put it in its place.
The federal government doesn't like it for some reason.
Nope, they don't. And by the way, California has the only state where even if you make it illegal in your city, you can have it privately delivered and they can't stop you. Like if you basically have like delivery of a pizza, you can take pot right to someone's home, they can order it and you deliver it, and no one can do anything about it. That's, we're the only state that has that.
Legalized drones, you mean? The drones?
No, legalized delivery of pot right to your doorstep, wherever you live in Carpinteria. I mean, in California.
Recreational and or medicinal?
It's recreational. You can do anything with it now. It's wide open. Medicinal pot, but we've got places going. You know, some towns, Santa Barbara is reluctant to put too many of those places in. Some towns won't put any in, but you can get delivery if you just call up on the phone and get it delivered from whatever town's nearby.
So do you see folks, well, you guys don't get out much, but do you see folks just kind of walking around just smoking a joint?
We're hermits. We don't see it much, though. But we see, the only difference we see is several of the farmers have left the farmer's market because the pot business is more profitable, obviously.
Oh, just to grow wacky tobacco, huh?
Yeah, instead of, you know, growing organic tomatoes, you never know what the crop is going to be, or the weather and stuff like that, or the floods are going to happen. Mm-hmm. But with pot, yeah, it's a lot of money in it.
If you'd like to be on the show, 888-663-6386. Email patrick@oneradionetwork.com with Adam Bergstrom, and we just kind of hang out and talk about all kinds of stuff. Adam does just a tremendous amount of research So are you done with the yellow fat thing for now? Are you going to move on to something else?
Well, you know, I'm not going to write any books. I started a 10th book, and then I realized I'm getting bored with this. Yeah. And yellow fat is a real thing. It's the closest thing to aging. And many times, people aren't going to mind. A lot of people don't regard aging as a disease.
No,
you gracefully age, and you make it to your 70s, 80s, or 90s and phase out. Most people, that is what yellow fat disease will do. But, of course, sometimes it goes awry, and you get all the dementia diseases, Parkinson's, multiple sclerosis, muscular dystrophy, Alzheimer's, and even... knock my headphones off.
I can hear.
Well, there's a variety of diseases you get from it, heart disease, cancers, and things like that, too. So it can cause those, but usually you have to be eating other things along with it to combine with it. But anyway, it's a real problem, and people certainly shouldn't be taking fish. Taking fish oil is like taking a mercury.
It's like the number one. Now, most of the research that you're seeing, what period of time has it gone on with people taking the PUFAs and stuff like that? What time period?
Well, probably back in the 80s, it wasn't that popular. In fact, Dirk Pearson and Sandy Shaw in their book Life Extension said, stay away from DHA. That is so volatile, it will go bad as soon as you put it in your mouth, even if you could get it fresh. So they were warning against it in their books, and people before that thought fish oil was not a good idea.
Yeah.
And then suddenly the fish oil industry realized there was a lot of money in it, so they made up stories. They borrowed George Burr's research and his wife back from 1928. They claimed that omega-3s and omega-6s were essential. And meanwhile, a study in Rice University from a famous vitamin guru, I think his name was Roger Williams, if I'm not mistaken.
Sure, sure. I know him. We know him. Roger Williams.
The B vitamin guy.
Yeah.
Anyway, he said that, no, it wasn't a fat deficiency. You were dealing with a B vitamin deficiency. They proved it. But because the oil industry wasn't getting any more money putting it in paint and various things like that. You know, linseed oil helps things dry. Fish oil helped the paint dry really quickly onto your wood. So now they needed something else, and they made up this story. And actually, it's very damaging to the brain. It makes your brain smaller, stupider, and giving it to children is really a bad idea. But people are just going to get dumber, and Darwin's going to prove to be right. The Descent of Man. He didn't write the book called The Ascent of Man. He wrote The Descent of Man.
Devolution, I guess.
Devolution, yeah. I mean, if you look at the title, he knew what was going on.
So, but on the basic research that you've written so many books about, on the finding that yellow fat is a key to one of the reasons why people's bodies age, these bad fats, PUFAs, and you know, too many sixes, and what period of time have this all been going? I mean, like through the 1900, 1910, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, in that range?
I don't think anyone was taking fish oil back at that time. The only thing they were taking was cod liver oil since about that probably started in the 1700s, before the American Revolution. They were already experimenting with it, because especially in northern countries, it would cure vitamin A deficiencies and vitamin D deficiencies. So they knew it was kind of a miracle cure for that. But then, about the 1820s, 30s, 40s, and particularly at the Civil War time, they found that people who took a lot of cod liver oil were actually getting yellow fat disease. They had other names for it, like shrunken heart disease, which is one thing it does, and brown bowel disease. So they had their own names for it, and it's obviously yellow fat disease.
But so the cod liver oil or fish oil is like the main, the big gorilla in this whole yellow fat thing.
Well, at one point, now, as Ray Peet said on his last show, it isn't as bad, and I was relieved to hear that because I was raised on cod liver oil. It isn't as bad as the fish oil because at least there are vitamins and minerals in it. And, of course, Ray Peet would probably have no problem occasionally eating an entire liver because then you have all those other ingredients in the fish liver. And, indeed, the Inuit didn't take the oil. They ate the entire liver. They ate everything of the animal and avoided the, well, they ate the muscle meats, but they preferred the organ meats. They ate the thyroid. They ate things that protected against it. But if you look at it, desert people live the longest and are the fittest and make the best warriors. Edward Abbey noticed that. And if you check into it, you'll find most long-lived cultures, with some exceptions, like the Japanese, are desert dwellers. But take Okinawa. They barely eat any fish at all. Now they think it's healthy, so they added it in, and they're not a blue zone anymore.
But all the yellow fat that shows up now, it's got to be because people are eating rancid, yucky vegetable oils too, right? Like lesson oil.
Fresh oil is fine. In fact,
wait a minute. Hold on. So stay with me a second. So the PUFAs the yellow fat that you're talking about was caused by probably the bad oils over the last 10, 20, 30, 40 years that people ate, the Wesson oils and all that kind of stuff.
The good oils. The bad oils actually are better for you than the fresh oils. The fresh oils have the most chemicals in it that cause the most damage. By the time it's been getting more rancid, that's where you're kind of safer getting oils from the health food store because they've been sitting there a long time and they're partly diffused, so you lose
it.
A lot of people don't know about vitamin D. Gets old.
I want to dig into this. Hold on a second. So what do you mean, what would be a fresh oil and what would be, you're saying a sunflower oil in a glass at the HEB would be safer than just grounding an oil yourself?
No, sunflower oil is not that bad. I've never seen it.
I just picked that one up.
Let's take flax oil.
Flax oil, okay.
Flax oil, fresh flax oil, is more damaging than eating rancid flax oil, interesting enough.
Why is that?
It rots. It doesn't ferment. The idea of a fermented cod liver oil is nonsense. You can't ferment an oil. But anyway, they're selling it as that. And of course, Dr. Weston A. Price, he thought that fermented oil was bad. You can look it up. He represented the Squibb cod liver oil company, which took a lot of things out, and it was a highly refined oil, very clear. It was as clear as water almost, and they sold it under his aegis. And anyone can look that up.
Okay, so how would it be possible then that Andreas cured his whole IBS thing and all that stuff his gut with flax oil that his neighbor pressed himself every day? How, if that was bad for him?
I have no answer for that. No. I don't know. I don't know how he did that. All I know is omega-3s are very bad. Now, they say omega-6s are bad, but I don't have enough research to write a single book on omega-6s because I find some of them have more... have actually other benefits in them and oleic acids and things like that. But the ones I find worse are soy oil, flax oil, chia oil, CBD oil, some of those. And they just cause yellow fat disease. And anybody can go and don't look up the oils. Look up yellow fat disease and see what causes it.
But CBD's only been out. Hold on. CBD's only been out there for a couple years, and they say there's evidence that that's causing people to get liposuction in their body. There's actually research.
Oh yeah, there's research there. I think I put it in my book too. Any kind of oil that it will. Marijuana is highly estrogenic, and CBD oil is highly estrogenic. Right. So automatically, it's not good for you right from that beginning. But it causes aging, and people aren't going to change. It's only Ray Pete, myself now, and a man named Matt Blackburn, who is now called the Poofinator, and he's out there presenting evidence about it these days. Mm-hmm. And that's why the eggs, chicken eggs with omega-3s, are particularly bad for people. And also, lard now is not the same as it used to be, because they know if you feed omega-3s to pigs, they get very large very quickly. They gain weight. They gain water weight in their muscles. So
that's
it costs a lot of money.
That's because they're piggies. Stay right there. Adam Bergstrom, Patrick Timpone. This is OneRadioNetwork.com. I got a little gallbladder story I'll share with Adam, and we'll kick around some ideas on that. And we'll do it after this break. People are getting manic and taking all these stuff because they don't have sulfur in their brain or something?
That's correct. That's correct. And there's reasons for that. Kid out there in the street buying illegal drugs, all caused from that. Every bit of it. The manic, depression, suicidal tendencies, all caused from a lack of sulfur to the brain.
Whoa.
Because the glyphosate stops the uptake of sulfur from the body to the brain. There's a lymph system that runs from the digestive tract to the brain directly, and all they ever find in is sulfur. It goes straight to the brain because we're a sulfur being. We have to have the sulfur to keep us sane. If you don't have sulfur going to your brain, you become manic. If you look at all the drugs that they give people, they put artificial sulfur in there. It's a molecule, artificial, to trick the brain to think that you've got sulfur in your bloodstream.
Well, we have a way to get sulfur into your bloodstream, and then you don't have to trick your brain. Just put it in there. With our pure organic sulfur, you can click an order right on our website. Three prices, United States, Canada, worldwide. It's the real deal. Makes little crystals in the glass. Living Sulfur on OneRadioNetwork.com. I've been having fun, actually, with Andre Seed Oils doing the oil pulling, which is really kind of cool. You can do oil pulling with a pumpkin seed oil, which is no oxidation, absolutely fresh in Myron glass, and it doesn't spoil. It's got a shelf life like forever. Doesn't do anything in that Myron glass. You can smell it, and I've got some 6 months, and it's still as pristine as the day it was pressed up there. You can do sunflower, coriander, pumpkin, the black cumin seed. That's kind of fun to do. Boy, that's one to float your boat there. I did the 5-seed oil blend today. Hemp seed oil. And the coriander, what else? Black sesame, oh, that's a good one. Got these black sesame seeds and the pumpkin seed oil. So this would be a nice thing if you want to do oil pulling. I'm started to do it. I'm going to do it every morning now for a while. Really feels great. There's all kinds of research on oil pulling and what it can do for you with your teeth or with the gums. It can pull yuck stuff out of your body and your mouth. And why not do it with these pristine oils that have not been heated, no friction, there's no oxidation. I don't think there's any oils around the planet that can do that for you. And I've got a little story about some black cumin seed oil that I think you're going to find very interesting. Very interesting. And that's coming up after this. I'm going to talk to Adam about it. Did you know the DNA of the pearl and we humanoids are very similar? Did you know that?
The DNA that's responsible to create the pearl is very similar to how our human calcium metabolism is done. So it's very, very interesting. That's why the pearl is so good for our skins, for our bones, for even to rejuvenate our bone marrows, mm-hmm. rejuvenate our bones, and rejuvenate our skins, and also nerve systems, you know, joints, all kind of muscles, and like eyesight, our eyes is a big muscle, basically, and also our heart. It's very good for the heart.
It's quite interesting that she mentioned the pearl works to build the bone marrow, and in Ayurveda medicine, they've often talked about the idea when you build the bone marrow is when you build beauty and longevity. Curious. Pearl, this is a great product. You can brush your teeth with it, and in my opinion, you'll see amazing results on your toothies. Really amazing. You can take it internally, mix it with face cream. Our link on One Radio Network goes to a two-pack where you get a great discount, but if you only want one to start, just click around and you get yourself one. Pearl Sim, click on the ad on front page, OneRadioNetwork.com. I just had an idea, too. You could get into our sauna and do your oil pulling there, and then spend 20 minutes do the oil pulling thing. Yeah. Our saunas are great, and $9.95 delivered. If you'd like to get one, just email me, Patrick@OneRadioNetwork.com. We think it's probably one of the best, most effective ones out there. I mean, it's not as pretty as, some of these wooden saunas, but it also doesn't cost $4,000. And most of these wooden guys, you don't really sweat as much as you do here. I guess some of them you do. But they're very beautiful, and they're nice, and, you can lie down on them. They're pretty cool, but they're $4,000 or $5,000 or whatever. Get one of these guys. You just sit in it, and every now and then, every couple of days, you take the towel off and wash that baby, put it back on the chair, and it's a really nice unit. Very, very effective. Just email me. I'll hook you up no matter where you live. I'll give you the best price we can, $9.95 in the lower 48. And that's Patrick@OneRadioNetwork.com.
Know the Source on One Radio Network.
Know the Source. Adam Bergstrom, Yes, No, Maybe. Chronobiotic Nutrition, also SunSync Nutrition. That's right, Adam, $99, right, Adam, for the rest of your life, forever.
And that's it.
That's
yeah.
it, forever. And that's good. And then you don't have a cutoff there at 80 or 90 or something, right? If people live to 100, then they're good, right? And then
as long as they're around, yeah.
And then also solartiming.com, and that's where Adam has all the ebooks that he has, all the cool ebooks, and including all the, if you'd like to bone up more on the whole yellow fat thing, you can get the ebooks there. I think he's got, how many ebooks you got on yellow fat? Eight or nine, right?
Yeah, I've got 9 on yellow fat, and of course, SunSync Nutrition, body dowsing. That's something I'm pushing lately. I've been doing a lot of blogs about it, so it's one of the best. Well, it is. It's the by far the best finding your trauma technique in the world today.
The body dowsing. Whoa. And you can learn how to do it yourself, right?
You do it yourself. Now, it's a lot easier. People are making it out as being hard. Yeah. And maybe because I'm showing the figure eight technique, like you have to do something with the legs. What's happening is the feet are talking to you. All you do is question a person and hold their feet. If they have a trauma with a woman, the right foot will jump, like a tremor will go through it. If they have a trauma with a male, the left foot will jump. It's as simple as that. You don't have to even turn it. Why I like to turn it is you can feel the difference more because the leg will jump higher. But anybody can just hold the feet, and if they have the patience to wait and work on enough people where they see what the reaction is, you cannot have a trauma with a person and not have a muscle movement. So another good thing about body dowsing, you can test any other technique. If a person says, my technique has got rid of your engram, your cognitive shock, all you have to do is hold their feet and ask them about the person, and if the foot jumps, they haven't. If the foot doesn't jump, they have. It's just as simple as that. It's like putting a meter.
Yeah. So there's just no way, in your experience, Adam, that somebody could lie down or sit or whatever they're doing, and you're holding their feet, and you can be asking them, and if you touch in on some kind of trauma that's still around, there's just no way that the person could react to it without it feeling it in their feet.
There'd be a jump. Yeah, they can't until they get rid of it. And one of the problems with engrams, they're holographic.
Sure.
You don't get rid of an engram because the way the engrams work, and I'm not talking about Scientology's engrams. I'm talking about the original founder of the engram back in 1903 or so, where he put the best system of memory together of anybody has had for an explanation and how it works and how a hologram works. In other words, when I have a memory of something, I'm not having an original memory. I'm having a memory of 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 a memory.
Right.
And of course, that's why witnesses do so poorly in evidence, because unless they go back and get hypnotized and get the engram that started the engram that started the engram. So many people are traumatized by something that didn't even happen or that they imagined, because it's not the same thing that happened, and they have embellished on it for whatever reasons,
right.
And it gets bigger and bigger and out of control.
Yeah, which I think is really the model for common everyday anxiety attacks, is what you've just described.
Yeah. You know, I had a person in El Paso, and they went to the ER, and they had seizures suddenly. Yeah. So when they got out after, I forget, thousands of dollars worth of tests, they brought me in to see the person when they were briefly out of the hospital. And I said, can you stick out your tongue? She said, no. Could you before you went in? Yes, I could. I said, they didn't even ask you that in the hospital? So then she, I asked her what she had taken, what they had given her, nothing. But then it turned out they had given her, not a drug, but three Tylenols, and that caused Ray syndrome, which they found out. But when I turned this lady's feet, as soon as she mentioned her boss, her right leg froze up like a 2x4, and it was so serious that I told the sister that, you know, if you make this person well and she has to go back to work, she's going to die. She's not going to survive. My advice is to get out of Dodge, get her the heck out of the state. And that's what they did. And she got over the seizures and everything's fine because she hated her boss, who was a relative, and it was causing seizures. She'd rather have it die of a seizure than go back to work for a boss.
So she created that experience because she just didn't want to go back.
Yeah, and these are the easiest ones. Now, every once in a while, I find a trauma that's legal. You got to go to court, and people get traumatized. But most people make their own traumas. It's something that they do by honor or duty, like I got to support my wife, or I got to do this, or I got to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen people die by doing that. You know, they're nice and ethical, but actually, sometimes the irresponsible people live a lot longer because they just abandon their responsibility and don't get all the traumas from it.
Sure, sure. Yeah.
It's almost good to be a sociopath, you know. Sociopaths live long. I call it a spiritual sociopath, though. You don't go do bad things to people like Hannibal Lecter. You do good things, but you don't get emotionally involved in their stuff.
Yeah, in anybody's stuff, even your own, right? It's just a problem, yeah.
And by the way, I've been oil pulling for 7 years.
Really? Yeah.
And I don't take supplements. I see nothing wrong with coriander oil, nothing wrong with sunflower oil, with black cumin oil, pumpkin seed oil. I even think I remember Ray Pete saying something positive about black cumin oil to take it for some reason back in the day.
Yeah, and I got a little story about that I'm going to share. And first off, let me do the gallbladder thing. I think that you'll find this fun. So as you know, I've had my little digestion karma going on for, what, ad nauseum, right? It's just been crazy how long. And, you know, I know people are getting tired of even mentioning it. I mean, you've talked to me about it. You know, and I can't tell you how often I have asked Spirit to show me exactly what's going on, right? I mean, kabillions of times. So it's not that I haven't been open, you know, to finding the root cause. But sometimes with these things, I found, Adam, that it just takes a while because it just does. I don't know the reasoning for it. You know, sometimes Spirit is just sending us through these, you know, these landmines to see how strong we can get. You know what I mean? Or how much patience we have. Or can we do it without whining? That kind of thing. There's all kinds of reasons why we don't get instantly healed. Does that make sense? There's all kinds of reasons, karmically.
Definitely.
Yeah,
definitely.
You get that.
Things
right?
Have their own divine timing.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Their own time. So anyway, so the other night I had this, I had this dream with a chiropractor. And he was a real good kinesiologist guy, Adam, and you know how that is. So he had me standing there and my arm was up and he was doing it really quickly. You know how the good kinesiologists can do it. Boy, they go, you know, they touch here and they do that. And he was, boy, that's good. He said, man, your stomach's doing better than the last time. And everything was real positive. And then right before he left, he goes, oh, there you go. And I could feel it in my gallbladder, right? He said, oh, there you go. Okay, feel that? Yep. And then my arm went weak. And then he said, there you go. There. Yeah. So you need a little work there. And he said, he had some special pills where you get to these digestive enzymes. He tested those. He also recommended choline, which is kind of weird. Do you know what choline is? Is that a B vitamin?
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of it. I used to be back in the day, if you read my old thing on choline. I am a talking liver spot, yeah. But I'm not a big fan of it these days.
That's what he tested me for anyway. So anyway, so then right after that, I started to think about, well, I'm going to do a gallbladder flush. And what's funny is that I talked about it on the air about doing a gallbladder flush maybe 6 weeks ago. And I got ready for it about two or three times, and I never did it, right? I get all the way to drinking the oil and say, oh, man, I'm going to have pasta. I'm not going to drink that oil. So I knew I was supposed to do this, but as humans do, we sometimes just say, we don't listen, right? So finally I got it. I said, well, okay, I'm going to do this. So so Friday, and I didn't do it. I didn't prepare much. I didn't do anything. You know, how you're supposed to do, taking the fast food and do the apple juice and Epsom salts to, you know, to make the biliary tubes, what does the Epsom salts do? More expandable, so the stones come out. You know, I didn't do any of that stuff. You know me, I just dumped down the oil about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, 8 ounces of oil with a little bit of orange juice and lemon juice or lime juice. And I didn't eat anything after lunch. And it felt pretty good. I didn't feel badly. And I did do some digestive enzymes right after I drank the oil. And Dr. Jubb had said years ago, if you do that, it helps the oil to move out of your stomach and you don't feel nauseated. That's pretty interesting. So I never felt nausea at all with 8 ounces of oil. Just didn't feel badly. So I wake up, or in the middle of the night it started. And man, I start, nothing much, you know, just gunky stuff, you know. And then in the morning, I started passing some stones. And some were green, but they were hard. It looks like just kind of fat, you know, like cholesterol or, you know, some kind of a fat thing. But they were hard. I had a couple of them that were about 3/4 of an inch long. I saved them. I'll take a picture. They're big. I don't know how those suckers got out of there. But and then a lot of small ones, a lot of the gray ones, the hard stuff, you know, the rocks more, they sink to the bottom. But they're real small, you know. The bigger ones were more fat. You know, or more greenish, gray, yuck. And anyway, so I got a whole handful of it. You just cup your hand like that. I'm holding out my hand. I got a whole handful of those suckers. And, the next day, though, Saturday, I felt like really drained. You know, I just didn't get a lot done. And just kind of rested and all that. And Andreas had said it's really good to do a colonic after one of these things, because they'll be swimming around in your colon for a while, you know. So I'm going to go do a colonic on Wednesday morning. And, you know, I think I'm going to do another one, because if that many came out the first time, there's probably more in there, huh?
Could be. I've done a 14-day one, an 11-day one, a 10-day one, and a 3-day one. So.
You did one every day for 14 days?
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah, so, now, not only that... my method of doing it was you start off the morning with 4 ounces of olive oil and 4 ounces of apple juice. Then you drink half apple juice and half water till noon. Then at noon, you have 4 ounces of corn oil and 4 ounces of tomato juice. Then you go back to apple juice and water all day, and then you top it off at night by 4 ounces of olive oil and 4 ounces of apple juice. And you do that for 14 days.
And that sounds hardcore. What kind of stuff came out?
Well, I got those green balls out. Mine dissolved, so they were more like biliary things, because they lasted about 3-4 days, and then they dissolved. If you get true gallstones out, which do come out, they're often different colors. You can make a necklace out of them, and
kinda
they're
cool.
Definitely can. I've seen them as big as thumbs too.
Sure. Do you think those green things that I got, some of those, and they are hard, so they couldn't have been formed over 10 hours. They got hard, so they were in there. Do you think those would eventually go to what we would call a more solid? Well, they're solid, but into a stony gray thing after a while? That's how stones are formed?
Well, they're partially formed like that. It depends on what kind of stones you got. You can get them from too acidic, from too alkaline. There's all kinds of different ways of getting stones. And our diet has a lot to do with it. In fact, the perfect way to get stones is don't eat any fat, because then the gallbladder doesn't squirt. You want it to keep squirting, and stones can actually form in the liver. They can form in the gallbladder. They can form. The worst kind is to get them in the duct. Then they get stuck. And when you pass them, you have to be very careful, because people have died when a large enough stone gets caught in the ileocecal valve, and people have actually died from that. If you go back in the old medical textbooks, they show you dramatic examples of that happening. But I've done many gallbladders.
Never had a problem,
Never had a problem, never heard of a person having a problem. And as a typical example, one time I get to El Paso, I knock on my friend's door, and she says, "Oh, you're just in time. So-and-so is having a gallbladder attack." So I ran there, and I did reflexology on the foot at the gallbladder points to move the stone so she got relief. Then I told her about the gallbladder flush, and she was due for surgery that Monday, and of course,
didn't have to do it.
She didn't have to go. And I know other cases like that too. So it's very a very good strategy, because it purges. I'm not sure exactly what the constituents are coming out there, but no matter what, you'll keep people from going surgery.
Generally, it's better out than in, right? Regardless of what it is, right? You can sludgy stuff can't be making the gallbladder happy to do its little bile thing, can it? I mean.
Almost always.
You know, one thing, a couple of things I did do to add to that, probably why I had a good experience with it, was I began in that Friday morning putting a castor oil pack right on my gallbladder with some DMSO with the heating pad. So I had that sucker on all day long, right? And I kept it on all night long, too, and I would change it. So I think that softens things up. Also... Right? I mean, that really works, right? You know.
Excellent. You know, Edgar Cayce, his book, Da Palma Christi, I believe, was all about that.
You could do that. And then I have a couple of fancy machines I've had for years. Oh, the Q laser and the biomodulator. And I got out that book you recommended, The Touch for Health. So I was putting, I was all day long, too, and all night long, I was doing little, right on the various... acupuncture points in my toes and my ankles for the gallbladder. So that way, I think, was helping it to be happy as well. And then also, I've got that far infrared lamp that we promote. I put that sucker right on the gallbladder. So I was doing a lot of stuff to making Mr. Gallbladder happy, you know, before I drank the oil and after I drank the oil. And then I would slap it around, too. After I drank the oil, you know, I'd get on my little bench and I'd just slap the bejesus out of my gallbladder. I figured, just give it more energy, you know, more. So I had a good experience. I'm going to do it again Friday night. And I think what I'm going to add to it, the classic way to do it, Adam, and I've never heard the way you did it. That's just fascinating. I don't know if I'd even try that. But anyway, is you do some, I think, Epsom salts at 6 o'clock and then at 8 o'clock, right? And then you do the 10 o'clock olive oil. I mean, Annie Jeb used to say you could also do I forgot about a coffee enema after I took the oil a couple hours after, just to clear things out. But I think the Epsom salts, they're supposed to expand the biliary tubes, right, to make it more easily for the, is that what they do, the Epsom salts, do you know?
I've heard that, yeah. I can't validate that one, but. Yeah.
I remember you talked about the corn oil and tomato juice one time, a couple years ago. And I just wanted to do that, but I couldn't find an organic corn oil, remember? I just couldn't find it anywhere. And I found one in Europe, and I bought it, and I did that for a bit. Tell folks about that. That's kind of a trippy thing, the corn oil tomato juice.
Corn oil and tomato juice, yeah. It's really good for the small intestine. One of the best things to clean it out. And that's why... It got added to the gallbladder one, because it clears your intestines at the same time as your gallbladder.
And what time do you take that? Is it around noon? Did I remember?
Around noon, exactly. Heart time. It's good for the heart. You know, the gallbladder protects the heart. A lot of people don't realize how important it is for heart health. If you have a gallbladder problem, usually there's going to be a heart problem, and that's why they're often confused for one another. As a general rule, if you have a heart attack at midnight, it's really a gallbladder attack. And if you have a heart attack at noon, it really is a heart attack. There are some exceptions to the rule, depending on the bicuspid valve or the tricuspid and some technical stuff like that. But the odds are That's true.
You know, one thing I'm excited about is, as you know, Adam has taught us that gallbladder time, Adam, is what, 11 to 1 solar, right? Which today would be, let's see, it would be 10 to midnight, correct? Let's see.
That's it.
Okay, because we're on daylight savings time, 10 to midnight. And that was the time when I would often wake up, even if I went to bed at 9 and wake up, you know, midnight, right in the middle of gallbladder time with this burning thing. And the last two nights after I've done the gallbladder flush, I have not. So that's a good, you know, I don't want to, you know, get carried away here, but I think it's a good indication that maybe the gallbladder was, you know, part and parcel of this tummy thing after all that time. You know, I just Googled, you could actually get, check this out, I'll be darned. You can get corn, maize, unrefined organic virgin raw Coplus premium corn oil on Amazon.
Wow.
Yeah,
it's amazing.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, because they're polluting our foods very rapidly these days.
So it's $5? Is that possible? Corn, maize, oil, unrefined organic, cold, fresh, premium, fresh, just 12 ounces. And why would people do that? It would. You think it would help with if people had some SIBO going on, they could try this tomato juice and corn oil at noon?
Very good for the intestines. The time I did it, slime, I had been fasting for 6 or 7 days.
Yeah.
And when I added that to the original gallbladder one, I just did the first one without that. There was another one before all of these. And 6 days, even after doing enemas, nothing was coming out. I thought I was done. When I added that combination of the corn oil and the tomato juice, I started to get the smelliest, slimiest garbage on, running to the bathroom every half hour or hour with this. I had to hold my nose and run out of the bathroom, flush and run.
It was that bad,
so
huh?
Whatever came out of me, I'm glad it's out.
I'm trying to look at the label on this. It looks pretty good. We'll put this in our store. This might be fun, organic, virgin. What else does it do, the corn oil and the tomato juice together?
Well, it apparently works on the gallbladder indirectly. I'm not sure exactly how it does that. It shouldn't be done by itself for the gallbladder, because you can get a stone stuck, apparently. I know someone who got mistaken and did the corn oil, and they got they had some problems. That's the only problems I've heard of. But the best thing is it is very good for cleansing the intestines, and of course good for SIBO and all those other type of small intestinal type problems.
And what would be the recipe for that? I don't remember what you said.
Half and half, 4 ounces and 4 ounces. Now, if you were monkeying around, you just wanted to give your colon a little dose, you could take a teaspoon of each, you know, that kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
You don't have to do a heroic purge.
You don't have to get heroic about it. But that's pretty interesting. Yeah, oh, very good. And you could get some, organic, fresh pressed tomato juice. It would be pasteurized, but they have the good stuff from, what is it, Lakewood, where it's made from real tomatoes, not paste, and so that'd be a reasonable choice, right? Lakewood.
That's the one I use these days.
Yeah, that's a good thing. Patrick Timpone, Adam Bergstrom. It's a good, great brand, and it's OneRadioNetwork.com. If you'd like to be on the show, 888-663-6386. Email patrick@OneRadioNetwork.com. Okay, now I got an H. pylori story, and I know that you've had your own opines about H. pylori and what it is and what it isn't, and there's a lot of misinformation about it out there. But about a year ago, you know, as I'm deep in research in my digestive thing, Adam, I did a stool test, right, with Sandy Rideout, that intestine guy out of Canada we've had on the show. Sandy, cool guy. So we did a stool test looking for, you know, what could be going on with Patrick's tummy a year ago, and the H. pylori test showed up negative. So I just kind of tossed it aside and said, well, I don't have that overgrown, so that's fine. That's not part of the puzzle. So I started working with Dr. Lewis, because he's got this really nice deal. For $350, you can do a 50 marker thing, you know, blood test, and he gives you an hour consultation. It's on our front page. And he said, you should do one of those, because I think you'd enjoy it and look at some stuff. And he said, I know you don't like testing too much. And I said, well, that's okay. I'll do it. That'd be fun. So it's really interesting. the day that I did the test, which is two weeks ago Thursday, so that's 14, 15, 16, 17 days, something like that. It was really weird, Adam. I intuitively knew somehow that I had H. pylori. Now, what? That's weird. I had an overgrowth, right? I mean, I just kind of got that on the inner. I just kind of got it. Isn't that strange? It's like somebody tapped me on the head. And I hadn't even tested. So I did the test, and that day I started taking mastic gum. You know mastic gum?
Mm-hmm. You know, I do.
That's a Brazilian herb, and that's supposed to be the number one go-to guy for H. pylori. So I started doing mastic gum. I added a little bit of NAC because people say that helps, and also bromelain, a little bit of bromelain. And they say if you do this in mastic gum, of course, I did about triple the dose what they say you should do, because I figure what's worth doing is worth overdoing. So I started doing this mastic gum, and I've been doing it every day, three times a day, 2,000-3,000 milligrams three times a day before each meal. And I tell you what, I can feel that something really good is going on. So then I get the test back 2-3 days ago. I haven't seen the whole test, and it showed up positive on the H. pylori on the test that I took. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Isn't that weird? So then what I started to do a few days after I started taking the mastic gum, I started taking the black cumin seed oil that you mentioned, Dr. Pete. If you Google black cumin seed oil, man, it'll cure everything. I mean, it's trippy what's out there on Dr. Google. It's a very powerful thing. And if you mix it with Manuka honey, about half and half, or the recipe I got was 6 grams of black cumin and 12 grams of Manuka honey, and you take it after every meal, and that'll also croak out H. pylori. So I've been doing that too, and my tummy's feeling really happy down there. So H. pylori, and you've said that there's a lot of misinformation about what it is. Most people have some H. pylori in their stomach. Tell me what your opinion on H. pylori is.
94% of people have it in. So,
have it in
so
them.
Something seems to be on there, because 94% of people don't have ulcers. And
right.
Ulcers were known back in the day to be stress-related, but they decided to change that story and make up a story. Even Skeptic Magazine, which is my nemesis. I don't care for Michael Shermer and those guys, or Amazing Randy. But they even ran a story about how that H. pylori stuff was screwy. And indeed, it seems to show that H. pylori has some advantages. But you can get overgrowth.
Sure. Candida, right? I mean, you can get overgrowth of it.
Yep. I had, if you get rid of them, they, like with antibiotics or however they do it, they come right back. So I had a lady one time that she had a stomach problem, and turned out to be a mother issue was the problem. So what happened is she had H. pylori. They killed it. It came back. So they said, okay, we have to go to step two. We're going to strip the entire lining of your stomach so that it's all gone. And then you have a second layer underneath. And I looked at her and said, do you realize how nuts that is?
Yeah.
And she says, it is nuts, isn't it? Mm. And then I told her she had a mother trauma. She said, no. So we did a muscle test, and she said, well, I guess I didn't get over it. And yeah, I do have a mother trauma and stuff like that. But sometimes you tell people the truth and they don't like it. So she never paid me for the treatment.
Yeah. So let's see. So modern medicine has tried to link an overgrowth of H. pylori to an ulcer, right?
Yep.
But we know that that's not totally. But we know that stress creates it all at the beginning. You know, at the root cause of all this stuff. But I guess you could get an ulcer without having an H. pylori overgrowth, right? Or you could have one or the other.
With a cognitive shock, very easy to have.
Sure.
There's so many ways to get an ulcer. You can have a stress ulcer. You can just have a very upsetting incident, like an automobile accident, or have to go to court to pay something, and you can have an instant ulcer on the spot. And that's been researched by Helen Flanders Dunbar, a whole bunch of researchers back in the day. That information was basically killed by the by the national security state. Truman's administration took care of all of that. All the medical data was repressed. A whole bunch of things happened then. Title I, Title II, you name it. They basically took our freedoms away, and the Republic was no more since 1947 in September.
We lost a Republic. I don't know where we lost it, but it's down there somewhere. So an ulcer would be like an extreme form of gastritis. Does it always, in your opinion, or research, have some kind of an infection correlating to it?
Stress. Always do
you have to create an infection first that creates the ulcer? Or can just create the ulcer, boom? Probably.
No, you can have it from something goes in. There's various ways of getting it. The main way is, who's the matter with me? It's either a he or she, and when you address that, you find out what it is. But ulcers are caused by numerous reasons. They tried to heal them over with a milk diet and all that during the 60s, and I found in kidney books that they caused thousands of people to die from kidney disease by combining an alkaline diet with a bland diet, and they wipe people's kidneys out. Right. You can find that in the kidney textbooks. No one sued them for that, but that's what happened.
I guess it's possible I could have had an ulcer these last few years that caused a problem that I would have known about, right?
Possibly. Very likely. One of the ways to find out is you press right under the sternum.
Yeah.
And if you have a pain there in the middle, it's either going to be heart disease or it's going to be an ulcer, the two things. And then you narrow down with touch for health testing or the Chapman reflexes. There's various ways to test quite accurately what exactly it is.
Well,
old-timey doctors used to do palpations. They didn't need blood tests and all that.
They went
and they smelled, they tasted, they palpated. They could tell everything from a muscle test. In fact, with a good kinesiologist, you don't need dental x-rays. Anyone who can't test for dental cavities and everything like that, muscle kinesiology is not a very good kinesiologist.
Yeah, and so, you know, to that regard, that spot that you just mentioned, I mean, that's hurt for on me for 2 or 3 years. I mean, it's just barely hurts now, and it's going away. But that's where it's mainly hurt. So it was probably an ulcer. There's nothing wrong with my heart. It was probably,
that certainly wasn't GERD, because GERD is a lot higher.
Yeah,
you would have had acid.
And I would have felt it, and I never had any acid reflux stuff. So I probably just got gave myself an ulcer because of, you know, my crazy life the last 10 years, probably. Well, it's easy to do.
It can do it. And see, with body dowsing, you turn the feet and find out what the traumas are. So you can head it off at the pass. Before, you could do male and female left and right by what happened. You broke a bone on the left side. It was going to be a male. Well, once I found out that you could tell in advance what was going to happen, what an advantage. You don't have to break the bone and do it after the fact, or smash the ankle or whatever. You tell what's going to happen, because once you get those indications, you become like a walking kinesiological target, is what O'Donnell Lay used to call it. In other words, when I was going to get married to one of my wives back in the day, I started to have, I was definitely having a she problem, and so Frisbees would find my right leg and hit it right in the center of the lower leg always. So when I was going to get married, we went up to a pre-wedding party, whatever you call them, and we're playing horseshoes. So I see this horseshoe coming, and I knew it was going to bounce off, and I knew I was a target for it, so I ran from it. And I ran right into its path. It did a 90-degree turn and smashed me in the shin. And, of course, after I got divorced from that marriage, I was so traumatized that I went on a bicycle ride to throw my garbage out and the rest of her stuff. I went over the handlebars, and my entire right side of my body, there, I had to pick pebbles out of my forehead. I had to pick them out of my ankle. I had to pick them out of my side. And I'm standing in the middle of this rubbish and wreckage, looking at my left side, because there wasn't a single scratch on the other side. And yet I had to recover from the rest of it. It took me over a year to recover from it.
That's amazing. Patrick Timpone, Adam Bergstrom, OneRadioNetwork.com. If you'd like to be on the show, please join us. 888-663-6386. Email patrick@oneradionetwork.com. It's such an honor to work with Daniel Vitalis and his company, Sir Thrival. Gosh, it's been, we're in our 12th year now with Daniel. We met him early on through David Wolf, and such a great guy, and wonderful products, and the way they go after these products is just pretty remarkable in this day and age when everybody, so many people are trying to cut corners and do this and substitute this for this and don't put this on the label. But I can guarantee you, you can be assured that if you go to Sir Thrival through our website and our store, and you look at all their products, the Shaga, Reishi, Elk Velvet Antler, Pine Pollen, Colostrum, they got some really wonderful digestive bitters now, and you got a little spray bottle, very inexpensive. Just go, psh, psh, psh. Digestive bitters is a great thing for liver, gallbladder. That bitters, they've been using bitters in Europe for forever to help digestion. They also he has some bone broth. I think he has a vitamin D K2 product as well, and also a taboo, which is if you're going to go out on your honeymoon or make a baby or something, you might want to try that. It's a great company. We're very honored to work with them. Please consider if you want to get some of these kind of products. This is a little bit on the pine pollen. Stephen Buhner, master herbalist, wrote an entire book on pine pollen. Previously, we asked him, what's the difference between gathering some pine pollen, eating that, and then maybe taking Sir Thrival pine pollen and the grape alcohol, the tincture? What's the difference in the body?
Okay, the difference is pine pollen is probably one of the best nutrient food substances on the earth. And you see, it's made to be uptaken by all of the life around it. All of the other plants take it in and use it for growth. Many of the animals eat it, and it's a very nutrient substance. If you eat it, what happens is it goes through your GI tract and then puts it into the bloodstream, and there's a lot of great stuff in it. I mean, it's really high in amino acids and protein and vitamins, so it's a very magnificent substance. It's kind of a nutrient longevity tonic food, and it will over time raise levels, but if you really want to raise them fast, you don't want to let it go through your GI tract, hence the use of a tincture.
And you can click and order this great product right on our website. Any of these are Thrival links. Take you right to the pine pollen and order away. OneRadioNetwork.com. Previously with Andrew Goss, I asked him, why would someone want to buy coins from his company?
So if you don't know coins, you better know your coin dealer. And, you know, you shouldn't buy coins from someone who isn't well-known registered dealer. So if they're an NGC dealer, they're registered with NGC. If they're a PCGS dealer, they're registered with PCGS. Ask questions. Don't just, oh yeah, here's 10 grand or 50 grand or 150 grand. I just want to buy coins, you know, let me know what I'm getting. And no, that's not how an intelligent investor does it. And we do not let you do that. So if you're not willing to learn about the coins that you're buying, maybe you should find another coin firm. Don't call this one, because we're going to insist that you know why and how a coin is rare. And once you know that, then I think you can take that knowledge into the marketplace and make intelligent investment decisions.
Aha, what a concept, intelligent investment decisions. I've known Andrew for 25 years. He's the real deal. His company, STL 800-468-2646. Give him a call if you're interested. 800-468-2646. Well, after so many years of looking at the monetary system through the heart and brain of mind of Andrew Goss, even if I didn't have a little relationship with him, still, boy, I'd be still high, very high on not marijuana, but on numismatic coins. It's a great way to hedge for inflation and to kind of protect yourself on the value of the dollar going down over the years. So it's good company, really good company. Check them out. Please consider them if you'd like to get into some numismatic coins. Not very complicated, and it's a great way to hedge against a falling dollar, which we believe is going to continue to happen over the years, because they're just going to create more money. It's 800-468-2646.
From the Hill Country in Texas, this is OneRadioNetwork.com.
With Adam Bergstrom, Yes, No, Maybe, Chronobiotic Nutrition. You know, Adam, it's really interesting. If, in fact, I did have an ulcer It's amazing that all of the fresh aloe, you know, that I drank, didn't cure that guy, isn't it? Why would that be, I wonder?
Anything can cause anything.
Yeah, and anything can cure anything. That's right. Yeah, you just don't know, do you? Yeah, wow. Yep.
And by the way, my ex-wife I talked about was not the problem. It was my trauma. So I want to make it clear she was not some kind of evil person. She's, to this day, she's on cellular nutrition, a herbalist, very fine person. And it's not her. It's what we have fixations about people. In fact, yeah. O'Donnell said that men want to, when they marry a woman, they want to hang around the wall in a picture and look at her, was their idea of what it is. And that yeah. was my idea, I suppose.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Another thing I'd like to clear up, you know, every once in a while I've got notes into like the last show. One was my daughter gets sick when she eats eggs at night.
Yeah, I saw that.
Well,
yeah.
Oh, you saw that. Yeah. This can happen because kids have fixations. They can't put the peas against the mashed potatoes. They can't do things and so. And solar nutrition, circadian eating, whatever you want to call it, chronobiotic nutrition, sun sink eating, is a longevity diet. So what you do up until 30, you can pretty much do what you want. So parents should never force their child into any kind of a diet. It helps if you have some kind of a disease or something like that. It's helpful, but forcing a child without cause gets them in a lot of trouble. I've seen a lot of health food parents that were hippies. These kids get raised on health food, and then they go and they end up managing McDonald's and
sure.
Burger Kings and things like that. So it's not a good idea. But anyway, it can be a trauma too. Any competent muscle tester, you don't have to be a body dowser to do this, could see when they think of eating eggs at that time if they have a trauma. And in fact, I met a person once that had a if they ate, I would test for a muscle test to show that a potato eaten at night would strengthen your muscle and daily. Well, I came across a guy that raw carrot would be fine at night, but he couldn't eat cooked carrot at night. And it turned out that his parents had forced him to eat carrots. So so a lot of times stress and trauma comes into the equation.
My mom would always brag about me, saying that Patrick is one of the best eaters I've ever seen. With seven kids, he'll eat everything, except the only thing he won't eat is beets. And isn't that interesting that I've got a little gallbladder thing going here, you know, 70 years later. Because beets is a gallbladder food, right?
Especially when you dexterize them, it makes all the difference
in
the world.
Oh, tell me about that. Okay, I've never dexterized a beet. I'm going to do that.
I had a friend of mine named Street Wizard, a really unusual guy. Mm-hmm. So he came over to visit me one time, and I made this big stew, and there were beets in it. Mm-hmm. Well, he hated beets, but he didn't want to tell me and insult me, so he tasted the beet. And suddenly he says, "What'd you do to this beet? What kind of beet is this?" I said, "What do you mean?" And he said, "This is a good beet. I hate beets. I like this. What is it?" And I didn't guess. I finally figured out that it was the dextrinization. So after that, he started dextrinizing his beets and became a fan of beets. It's a big, big difference. It makes them sweet like a dessert, when normally I don't like the flavor of a boiled beet. It's hard for me to eat. But you dextrinize them, they become like candy. Same with onion. You can dextrinize an onion and make it taste like candy.
You know, I can remember to this day, my mom would make beets, and I would almost throw up, you know, when I would just smell them and I would throw up. I probably came in this lifetime some kind of beet karma or something like that. And isn't that funny? Yeah.
There are a lot of people who don't like beets, and sometimes they're not as good for you. Right now, people who eat non-organic beets are at risk because they're too rich in nitric oxide and nitrites and nitrates, because they're like bulldogs. If you feed a bulldog an unlimited amount of food, they'll eat themselves to death. The same with a beet. If you give it regular fertilizer, it packs in the nitric oxide and mm-hmm. the nitrites and all of those, and makes it very dangerous to eat. You know, people get stomach cancers and all kinds of things. That never happens with a with an organic beet. And in fact, you want to sell a super beet, which are high in nitric oxide, just put regular fertilizer on and you could call it a super beet. Super beet. That's the scam on that one.
Do I remember too that don't beets help to strengthen the arteries or the veins or something as well?
It is a very good food. Yes, it works on that, and it works on the liver. Probably most famous for the liver, but it works on a lot of other parts of the body too. It has many minerals in it. Very beneficial vegetable, particularly if you dextrinize it and you make sure they're organic. There are certain nitrite accumulators like spinach and things like that that really should be eaten organic because they accumulate too much nitric oxide. And of course, nitric oxide at one point was thought to be good for you, and of course it's not. If I want nitric oxide, I'll just go down to LA and take a deep breath.
Take a deep old breath.
It's in the smog. Deep. You know, when I first moved to LA, I went swimming and I got a pain in my lungs. And I said, I think I've got a problem. I've got a pain in my lungs. And my buddy, my junior high school buddy said, oh, that's no problem. That's just the smog. You'll get used to it. I never did.
Mm-hmm. I think I need to clean my small intestine out. I'm getting severe cramps in my abdomen at small intestine time. Should I do corn oil and tomato juice?
You know, when you do those cleanses, you always can have them backfire and cause a problem.
Right.
It's good to eat the foods on time to start with and eat your morning foods, midday foods appropriate to the small intestine, and then your root foods and things at night. But you can experiment with it. My philosophy is if stuff starts going wrong early, just stop. You know, you can always stop. Some people, well, I'm going to keep on with this. The book says it's okay. But if you start having abnormal pains and things from doing that, you shouldn't. Otherwise, corn oil and tomato juice by itself is a very good remedy. And sometimes even, let me see what it was now. Oh, I forget the other one, but... sometimes corn oil and molasses can be helpful too.
Really?
They can be beneficial for the colon.
I wonder what you mean together, the corn oil, because we talk a lot about molasses with Dr. Daniels. I wonder why corn oil and molasses.
You know, it might even be an artificial form because there's a lot of people who argue about where the iron in molasses comes from.
Yeah.
Basically, it's burned sugar.
Sure.
They strip it out of the sugar. When people buy brown sugar, by the way, raw sugar is illegal in the United States. What they're getting is brown sugar is they take the white sugar and they spray paint it with caramel or with burned sugar, and then they sell it as brown sugar.
That's good.
It's
good.
Quite a scam.
Quite a scam.
Yeah, it's like a car wash. They have, if you go to the plants, they have it like a car, a spray paint, like they spray paint cars.
Sure, sure, yeah. 888-663-6386 email patrick@oneradionetwork.com. Also, to this emailer, you might want to try, this is a very inexpensive thing to try, it's worth a shot, is do the Bifido 2 in our store from Living Streams and put that in your ear, and Wayne says that'll drain on right down to the small intestine, and the Sandy Rideout says they've got some real good experience with small intestine SIBO and the Bifido in your ear. How in the heck can things get from your ear to your small intestine, Adam?
Easily. Reflexology works in mysterious ways. Yeah, your ears are actually reflexes to the kidneys.
To the kidneys, right.
You use stachian tubes or clears to the, or reflexes to the ureters. Your esophagus is the urethra.
Ooh.
And your bladder is your entire head.
Yeah, your kidneys are shaped like, I mean, your ears are shaped like a kidney, right?
Just like them. In fact, people with earaches often have kidney problems. You can go and trace them right back to there. And people with kidney problems often have ear problems. And there are even, mainstream medicine knows this somewhat, certain kidney diseases, your ears start misshaping or getting larger or different things happen to them. And of course, the so-called heart line in the ear is really a kidney line.
It's a kidney line.
Because the kidneys are a shunt for the heart.
That's pretty interesting. I wonder what the connection is for in the cultures where they would wear these earrings so they could stretch out their earlobes to make their ears bigger. because they thought it was a longevity thing.
Yeah, they can have some problems with that. You know, originally they designed earrings for therapy. You were just supposed to put it in there for short times.
Right,
but,
right,
of course,
yeah.
It turned out to be fashionable. The same thing with sugar. The Chinese devised it as a medicine, and people liked the taste, and they kept eating it.
Oh, man. These bodies are just so trippy, aren't they? Boy, I tell you.